As we have been discussing over these past week, as we move through the first seven verses of the seventh chapter of Romans, we now have a summation that I can provide you with of Paul's argument so far. And this, and you can read this on your own. I would encourage you to read. In fact, you can go to Questioning Paul and read it, and the translations that I have provided on your behalf, questioningpaul.com. So this is Paul's argument so far. You, as the audience, are ignorant. Paul is brilliant. He says the Torah acts like a lord. Women are under men. The Torah binds, restricts, and imprisons women to men. Point five. When a man dies, a woman is released from the inoperative Torah. Six. As a result, the woman is no longer an adulteress. Seven. When the woman goes to be with another man, she is no longer a slave to the Torah. Eight. As a result, you are put to death by the Torah. Nine. The body of Christo caused you and the Torah to die. Ten. You came to another by dying. 11. By being awakened and arising from death, you bear the fruit of God. 12. For then in the flesh you suffer evil afflictions and uncontrollable urges. Pure Gnosticism. 13. You are evil, offensive, and wrong because the Torah is operating within you, producing the fruit of death. 14. But now you have been released from the invalidated Torah. 15. You have died. 16. You were inappropriately hindered and held down by this deadly Torah. 17. The Torah's purpose was to enslave you. 18. You have been released to the care of a different and completely new spirit. 19. You have been freed from the old, obsolete, and inferior way which was written in the Torah. 20. You should say that the Torah is, we should say that the Torah is misleading, evil, and wrong. 21. We don't want to say this. 22. Nonetheless, Paul would not have known that he was evil if it had not been for the Torah. 23. So therefore, the Torah is responsible for Paul's lustful cravings, coveting, and sexual perversions. 24. It also killed him, but he's not dead. Now, without the numbers for each of the 24 points that Paul has made, I'm just going to read through it. The basis of the argument in Romans 7 is as follows. You are ignorant. Paul is brilliant. He says that the Torah acts like a lord. Women are under men. The Torah binds, restricts, and imprisons women to men. When a man dies, a woman is released from the inoperative Torah. As a result, the woman is no longer an adulteress when the widow goes to be with another man. She is no longer a slave to the Torah. As a result, you were put to death by the Torah. The body of Christ caused you and the Torah to die. You came to another by dying. By being awakened and arising, you bear fruit of the God. And then, in your flesh, you suffer evil afflictions and uncontrollable urges. You are evil, offensive, and wrong because the Torah is operating within you to produce the fruit of death. But now you have been released from the invalidated Torah. You've died again. You were inappropriately hindered and held down by that Torah that killed you. The Torah's purpose was to enslave you. You have been released into the care of a different spirit. You have been freed from the old, obsolete, and inferior way which was written in the Torah. So should we say that the Torah is misleading, evil, and wrong? We don't want to say this. Nonetheless, Paul would not have known that he was evil if it had not been for the Torah. So therefore, the Torah is responsible for Paul's lustful cravings, for his coveting, for his sexual perversions. It has killed him, and yet he is not dead. That's what he said. That was his point. If you think that makes sense, if you think it's an accurate reflection of the Torah, if you think that the God who authored the Torah inspired Paul to say these hideous things about the Torah, then you're way too stupid to be listening to this program. You're way too stupid to be operating a blender in your own kitchen. If I were you, I would go back to the Stone Age and unplug the toaster. Don't even think about driving a car. You're way too much of a nincompoop if you think that the God who authored the Torah inspired Paul to demean his Torah in this way. Oh, and by the way, you are a Christian if you believe any of this. That would also make you a complete and utter nincompoop. On what planet does any of this make sense? I don't suppose with such sublime rhetoric anyone is going to confuse Paul with Plato anytime soon, even though the underlying theme of all of this is Platonic. Plato was the gentleman that was the most responsible for promoting Gnosticism, for the spirit and this world that we in the flesh cannot see being good and the flesh being evil, a dim, poor, crude reflection of the perfect world. Paul wasn't finished. But soon the opportunity, the excuse, or the pretext, the basis and the starting point of a favorable environment and the opportune circumstance to grasp hold and experience that which is evil, that which is sinful and wrong. Through the commandment, it was brought about thoroughly in me, including every and all deep desire and longing. For indeed, without the Torah, that which is misleading, errant, and offensive is dead and no longer an issue. Pauline Christianity, Romans 7:8. Gets worse. So Paul says that the Torah provided the excuse, the pretext, to grasp hold of, to select, to exploit, to experience everything that was evil, sinful, and wrong. Everything that is misleading, errant, and offensive. And that the Torah's pretext to bring all of this evil upon us was through the commandment. That the statements that Yah etched in stone is the very mechanism which brought all of the evil that was infecting Paul. And it was brought about, he says, thoroughly in me. Paul is admitting that thoroughly, because of the statements that Yahweh himself etched in stone, the entole, which would be translated commandment, because of what God etched with his own hand in stone, that was the very basis of Paul himself experiencing evil, sin, that which is misleading and offensive. God made him offensive. And it was brought about thoroughly in me, he says, including every and all deep desire and longing, every lust, every craving, every uncontrollable urge, every sexual perversion, and complete licentiousness. Paul is admitting that he's a pervert. But rather than take responsibility for him being a sexual pervert, and he was, he's admitting it right here. It's not my words, it's his words. He's admitting that he was an uncontrollable sexual pervert. And he says that condition was brought on through the commandments which appear in the Torah. and that Yahweh's own instructions to us, that he etched with his own hands, is responsible for making Paul a sexual pervert. That is what this says. Now, it's true, Paul was a sexual pervert. And I came to that conclusion when I really studied Paul, and particularly his letters to Timothy, and this this realization that Paul had been called into the to confront Yahusha's disciples because of his errant teaching against the Torah and against circumcision. And so Paul is now brought down into Jerusalem and chastised for his preaching. And Shimon Kephesh, known as Peter, stands up against him and denounces everything that Paul has claimed. And yet, even when the core of Paul's argument against God and demeaning his Torah of it being of the flesh because of circumcision. And here in this letter in Galatians, he's going to say that if you're circumcised, then even God can't save you. As opposed to if you aren't circumcised, you can't participate in Passover, which means you can't be saved. You can't be a member of the covenant as a man. If you're not circumcised, which means there's no entrance into God's home or family. You can't have a relationship with God. That right after that, Paul personally circumcises his lover, the one love of his life, Timothy. And you might say, oh, that's, you know, pushing a little too far. And, you know, Paul spoke against homosexuality. Yeah, he did. Paul also spoke against the devil, even though he admitted he was demon-possessed. Liars always contradict themselves. You read the Quran, it's so contradictory. There's verses in the Quran that explain how to deal with the contradictions. Now, when I made the initial determination based upon the evidence that Paul was a homosexual, I had a lot of people say, you know, how dare you say that? But, you know, I then read Yahweh's prophecy regarding Paul, where he told us everything we could possibly want to know about this man, including that he was the plague of death. He said that he had a fascination with the male genitalia. That was good enough for me. This is truly an amazing statement. Now, it is all in keeping with what Paul has just said. It's just that it's perverse. Paul has written. I mean, folks, if you know a Christian, you ought to share this with them. Paul just wrote, but now the opportunity, the excuse and the pretext to grasp hold of and experience that which is evil, sinful and wrong. That which is misleading, errant, and offensive. Through the commandment, it was brought about thoroughly in me, including every and all deep desire and longing, every lust and craving, every uncontrollable urge, every sexual perversion. For indeed, with certainty, without the Torah, that which is misleading, errant, and offensive, that which is evil, guilty, wrong, is dead, and was no longer an issue. Paul has told us that he was perverted, sexually perverted. And he said he was sexually perverted because of the statements that Yah etched in stone that are presented for our edification at the beginning and at the conclusion of the Torah. They're presented at least twice, and maybe three times, but at least twice, the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone are presented in the Torah. And Paul is saying that the existence of sexual perversion in him was a direct result of Yahweh etching those statements in stone and communicating them through his Torah. That's what enabled the evil perversion that pervaded his nature. Wow. It's a double wow here. A double. How in the world did somebody this perverted, this insane, this irrational start a religion that is the most popular religion in the world? Are people really that stupid? evidently. The big wows are, Paul will, in a letter to the Galatians, admit to being murderous, to being ruthless, to being a thug. He'll admit to it. In the letter to the Corinthians, he admits to being insane and demon-possessed. And now in his letter to the Romans, he admits to being a sexual pervert. You know, why is it that Christians hold this man out to be this great saint? Saint Paul! He admitted he was a sexual pervert. Now, what's the second woe? Or wow. Is that he's blaming God for his sexual perversion. He's not accepting responsibility. He says, no, it's that damn author of that damn Torah, the guy that etched the commandments with his own hand. He's the one that's responsible for me being perverted. He's the one. Without him, I wouldn't be sexually perverted. Imagine. Imagine God's disgust at this man. I mean, just me reading it, folks. I'm disgusted. If you are a rational and informed individual, and you don't despise Paul, if you aren't disgusted by this man, if you aren't repulsed by his every word, there's something absolutely wrong with you. You've lost the ability to exercise good judgment. You've lost the ability to be moral. If you don't despise him. Because it's not just like he's this dude out there and saying, hey, God made me a pervert. He's the founder of the largest religion in the world. People think that this verbal diarrhea is scripture because he claimed it was so. Billions of souls have been led away from God by this man's rubbish. He's not just this some dope on a street corner that says, I'm a real pervert and God made me a pervert. I'm a pervert because of the Torah. If it wasn't for the Torah, I wouldn't be a sexual pervert. But I am because of the Torah. Blame the Torah, blame God for making me a pervert. All right, now if you saw, listen to someone on a street corner saying that, wouldn't you run away from him? Wouldn't you say, wow, that man needs to have a straitjacket on before he hurts himself, much less anybody else? But you think that an idiot that said that would be the founder of the world's largest religion, and yet it is so. We have Jim calling in from Phoenix that would like to make a point regarding the 18th point that Paul was making. I'm going to restate that point. Paul wrote that you have been released to the care of a different and completely new spirit. What do you think that means, Jim?
Well, to me, isn't that a complete confession? If he wrote that, and if
yes,
he spoke that, is
he
that not a complete confession?
Yes. Every bit of this is a confession, but absolutely that is a confession. That is Paul saying that that the spirit that he is representing is not the same spirit that it permeates Yahweh's instructions in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Let me read the verse to you. As far as I'm concerned, there is no question that your interpretation is right. But now at the present time, we have been released and removed from the Torah, having died in that which inappropriately hindered and restrained us, holding us down, in order to enslave us to a different and completely new spirit, and not the old, inferior, obsolete, and former age and way of that which was written.
And what is
so he's differentiating his spirit from the Torah, differentiating from the spirit of the that which is written in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. So if it's not the set-apart spirit, what spirit would this one be?
Exactly. And if the set-apart spirit, the Ruach Kodesh, I know the Ruach Kodesh doesn't have Yah's name in it, but it is implied because who is the Kodesh Kodesh?
Right. Yahusha.
Right.
The most set apart. You know why? But you know why? Right. Well, it's Yah's spirit. The set apart spirit. The adjective that describes the spirit's nature. So the ruach is always described by an adjective, and the adjective is kodesh, and the adjective being set apart.
Right.
So, since the adjective means set apart, you have to say set apart from whom.
Correct.
And Yah was really clear that the Spirit is part of Him, set apart from Him. And so, the Spirit is not just Yahweh, it's part of Yahweh.
Right. And if Yahweh is the I Am, not the we are, but the
right.
I Am.
Right.
And Yahusha is Kodesh Kodesh.
Right. Yahusha most set apart.
Has Yah's name in His name. So
right.
Part of Yah. Now, you can't get to Kodesh Kodesh until you go through Kodesh.
Correct. Correct.
So it's all one and the same. It's one spirit.
Correct. That's brilliant.
So now Paul is a new spirit. Okay.
Correct.
What is that spirit?
So the answer is obvious.
I would
Satan.
Say.
Satan. Now, let's talk about this for a moment because it's really an important understanding. Yahweh says, listen, Yisrael, Yahweh, your God, is one.
Right.
The nature of set apart, that explanation of set apart spirit, which is so vastly more accurate than Holy Spirit or Holy Ghost. Holy gives a religious connotation and doesn't explain the relationship between Yahweh and Spirit. Yahweh is Spirit. He is a spiritual entity. And that is why he describes the Spirit, his Spirit, as being Kodesh, set apart, because that explains that the Spirit isn't a second person, not a second persona, but that the Spirit is part of Yahweh, set apart from him to serve us. It's very much like you and I, Dan, if we were if I were to reach out with my hand, you know, I would have set my hand out to grasp hold of you. There's not two of me.
Correct.
Now, the reason that the Spirit is set apart, singular set apart, as opposed to Kodesh Kodesh, which is Yahusha, is that the child who was born became Yahusha because the Spirit of Yahweh, the set apart Spirit, was on him. That's why he said at the end, you know, just before his body died, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me? And he's only God in the flesh, a diminished manifestation of God in the flesh, so long as the Spirit's on him. And so the Spirit makes him Kodesh. But why is he Kodesh Kodesh?
Because he's set apart even from the set apart Spirit.
Yes, because he's matter, he's material, he's corporeal.
Right.
And spirit and energy, same concept. Just think of them as light.
Right.
And matter is exactly the same material that is energy. In other words, E equals, which is energy, equals M, equals is equivalent to matter. But it's not the same quantity of energy
right.
in matter. There are
so like your description earlier, your hand reaching out to touch
right.
me.
Okay. Right.
Now, what about say your hand reaching out to touch me, but your hand doesn't touch me, but the shadow that your hand creates touches me.
Yes.
It's still all the same thing. It's still
right.
just you reaching out to me.
Right. And the Einstein concept of E equals MC squared tells us that the most set apart, the Kodesh Kodesh, Yahusha, is equivalent to Yahweh in the sense that they are one and the same.
Right.
Same exact substance. It's just a dramatically, and it's just an amazingly diminished amount of that substance. It is very much like a fingernail or a toenail clipping compared to the whole individual.
Right.
That's how vastly different Yahusha is from Yahweh, and yet they're exactly the same. I've used the example in the past of if I have a couple of grams of pure gold on my desk, and yet just outside my window, if there's a mountain of gold, they're exactly the same thing. They're both pure gold. It's just there's a different quantity of gold. And that's the relationship between Yahusha and Yahweh. Now, in the case of Yahweh and the set-apart spirit, the diminishment does not have to occur. The set-apart spirit isn't a diminished aspect of Yahweh. It's just part of Yahweh set apart from him. There's no diminishment because you're going from spirit to spirit. This is really profound, but your point is that when Paul says that the new spirit is completely different than the spirit of the Torah, completely different from the spirit of that which was written, then it cannot be the set-apart spirit.
Right. Everything else just seems like supporting evidence. I mean, it's convicting, it's definitely. But to actually be so bold, to blatantly write down and say a new spirit, that is just absolutely condemning.
Yeah, of course. I don't know what is the most condemning part of these seven verses from Romans, because there's a lot of it that's condemning. One is that Paul claiming that the Torah enslaves women to men is condemning because it's not true. Paul claiming that a woman is released from the Torah when her husband dies. She's released from the marriage, not from from the Torah, and it's only she's released from the marriage because a marriage requires two living people. You know, I mean, so is that reach of logic the biggest flaw, or is the biggest flaw where he said that the Torah is dead, or is the biggest flaw where he says it's the Torah and the instructions that God etched in stone that caused me to be evil? Or is him admitting that he's a sexual pervert? I mean,
you can pull your hair out all day trying to rationalize what's irrational. That's the problem.
Right.
But it's been so beat into, like I come out of Christianity. I was raised a Lutheran.
Okay.
And you don't get any truth. And, of course, you're raised on Paul. It's always Paul this, Paul that.
Of course.
But you're not making any connection until you really look into the Torah and you compare Paul to the Torah.
Correct. Yeah, the antidote for Pauline Christianity is the Torah. That's why Paul has to kill the Torah.
Right.
And then if you know the Torah, that's why Paul talked to the audience of the Romans and said, you're ignorant of the Torah. Then he miscast the Torah. Well, the only reason that Paul could miscast the Torah for this argument is that his audience was ignorant of the Torah. But once you know the Torah, you are absolutely required, if you want to remain rational, to despise Paul.
And if you take Paul out of the New Testament, I mean, what do you have left? I don't even know if you could do that.
No, because you also have to remove the book of Acts, and you have to remove the book of Hebrews, because Hebrews was inspired by one of Paul's associates. And the book of Acts is mostly about Paul. And then you have to remove the book of Luke's, because Luke at the time was serving Paul. And so what you would end up with is, and Mark was not an eyewitness. And so you would end up with Matanyah, which means Yah's gift, Matthew, and Yahuchanan. But you would have very flawed Greek manuscripts of what they wrote in Hebrew. And you would end up with Revelation. But again, Revelation was written and spoken in Hebrew, and we have flawed Greek manuscripts of it. But that would be all that you would be left with.
Just a different point. You're talking about.
And by the way, can I just make one other thought here, Jim?
Yes.
Is that not only would that be all you'd be left with, but it couldn't be a New Testament.
Right.
Because according to Yahweh,
yeah.
The covenant has not been renewed. And since it has not been renewed, you can't have a past tense New Testament. So you could have those three open letters, Matanyah, Yahuchanan, and Revelation. You could have those three, but you could not have them in a construct called a New Testament. You'd have to remove them from that, which means then you would have to attach them to the end of the prophets, and they would be books after Malachi, Malachi, and Zechariah, and the like.
Actually, maybe it is a new spirit, or actually, maybe it is a New Testament because it's under a new spirit. Maybe.
Yeah, well, it is. The Christian New Testament is a New Testament. It's just that it has nothing to do with God.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the gospel of grace, and it has nothing to do with God. It is so why it is so sad. And truly, when Paul explained, as he did, that he was demon-possessed in 2 Corinthians, when he admits that the goad, the thorn in his side, is a messenger of Satan, that controls him, when he admits that that's his spirit, when he puts the most famous line that to Dionysus, the most famous of the gods of this part of Greece and Rome that he spoke to, when he puts Dionysus's most famous line, it's difficult to kick against the goad, into his God's mouth, he told us who the spirit was. He was very clear that this is the spirit of Satan. It's just that most people don't want to acknowledge that. But Paul was inspired by and wrote on behalf of and was possessed by one of Satan's messengers. We'll be back with Jim after the break. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Mist for today. Jim, your comments regarding that was a confession by Paul are astute. Now, let's talk a little bit about spirits. You know that Yahweh is spirit. He identifies himself as such. You know that the set-apart spirit is part of Yahweh, set apart from him to serve us. And you know that Yahusha was Kodesh Kodesh, so he was the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, but only so while the set-apart spirit was upon him.
Right.
There are created spirits, and the Malach, which are miscalled angels, are set-apart spirits. The Malach are in a command and control regimen. They do what God asks them to do. They do not have free will. Hasatan, the adversary, rebelled and took a number of these spirits with him, approximately a third of them. And so in our world, we do have some interaction to a very limited degree between Satan's gaggle of spirits and Yahweh's spiritual envoys. Those, the spiritual envoys that are still working with Yahweh would be the same spirit. There's no way to attribute Paul's different spirits to them because their whole purpose, the Malach means messenger. Their whole purpose is to convey Yahweh's message, and Paul has just repudiated Yahweh's message. So it can't be them, which means by default, the different spirit has to be Satan and the demons that were expelled from heaven with him.
So who's manipulating the goat?
You know, in terms of the beast in the end days?
No, the prod that Paul confessed.
Goad. I thought you said goat. You know, goat, if you get to the beast of Daniel's, I'm still, my mindset is in Daniel because I most recently translated it. Goad. The goad, the control of dumb animals, is absolutely Satan. Paul admits that it's Satan that is controlling him through the by goading him, which keeps him under control. Paul says, my ego would be so gargantuan that the only way that my ego, my pride can be contained is by being goaded by one of Satan's messengers.
Right, but it's not controlling Paul. It is guiding him. It's motivating him.
Right.
So what is, if the goat is motivating him, what is Paul's personal motive for rejecting Yahweh? What is it about Paul that he has to reject everything Yahweh? What's his motive, personally?
I really don't care, other than the sense of because he's just pure evil, and trying to understand what motivates an evil person. If I were to surmise a guess, it would be that he developed an animosity for Yahweh while training to be a rabbi. And rabbis really don't like God. That's why they don't use his name. That's why rabbinical Judaism is based upon the Talmud, the arguments of rabbis, as opposed to the Torah. So I think that his animosity probably began there. And then I think that he was rejected then by the rabbis. So I think he then was even hostile to Judaism in addition to being trained to be hostile to God. And all of a sudden, Satan waltzes up and, hey, bad boy, You want to be the most famous person in the history of the world? That's why I think he'd be bent.
From his character, it just seems like he has a problem with suppressing his impulses. He has a problem with checking himself.
Correct.
Isn't that what the Torah is all about? It's like, do not linger along at the wine. Protect yourself.
The Torah is
want to have that third
parental guidance.
Right.
As a parent, and I don't know if, Jim, if you're a parent, but if you're a parent, your approach to your children is to provide them advice which liberates them, but in such a way that they don't injure themselves, right?
And they check themselves.
Right.
Right. And it just seems like Paul has a problem with checking himself. He doesn't want to be restrained. And this
Correct.
Spirit gave him freedom, I guess. He has to receive some kind of satisfaction.
Yes, what's interesting, of course, here is he's admitting that he's a sexual pervert.
Right.
And he's saying, I am a sexual pervert. But he's saying that the reason he's a sexual pervert is because of the Torah. He's blaming God for him being a sexual pervert. He doesn't seem to like being a sexual pervert. He seems to be sensing that being a sexual pervert is disgraceful, and yet he's blaming God for him being a sexual pervert.
Well, what does Yah say that you will not receive satisfaction?
Correct. And what you're quoting there is Chabauk, Habakkuk, where Yahweh says of Paul, and he calls Paul the plague of death. He says that no one who embraces what Paul has to say will find satisfaction. And since the person who embraced Paul more than anybody else would have been Paul, he's saying you'll never find satisfaction. But that is human nature. Those who are just overly fixated on sexual pleasures are never satisfied. Those who are fixated on brutality, they're never satisfied. We'll be back tomorrow.